Today's episode of Part of My Take is brought to you by Movement Watches. MVMT watches are the best watches out there. I wear it every single day, and they are a watch company that is disrupting the watch marketplace, and I'll tell you how. Most of the time you see a nice watch, probably $500. Movement watches start at just $95. And they figured out that by selling online, they're able to cut out the middleman and retail markup, providing the best possible price to you. The classic design, quality construction, and styled minimalism makes Movement Watch awesome to wear. And everyone looks and they say, wow, that watch must have been $500. Nope. It was $95, and I got it from Movement Watches, and here is what we got for you. We have even a better deal than the $95. I have 15% off with free shipping and free returns by going to mvmtwatches.com/PMT. This watch has a clean design. Seriously, like I said, I've been wearing them. We all wear them. So go right now, mvmtwatches.com/PMT for 15% off. Today's episode is also brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country, and their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. Blue Apron has established partnerships with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States, and as a result, the seafood is sourced sustainably under standards developed in partnership with the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch. You're getting the best meals you can have, and they're home cooked. Everyone knows a home cooked meal is better. Cooking together builds those strong family bonds. Research shows that the Blue Apron families cook nearly 3 times more often, and those who spend a lot at restaurants or high-end grocery chains can now spend under $10 per person for a delicious meal. I'm going to tell you a couple things on the menu this week. Sweet and sour salmon. How about a spinach and fresh mozzarella pizza? Well, you can get it all with Blue Apron. Check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/pardon. That's blueapron.com/pardon. Let's go. Hey! Welcome to Part of My Take. It is Wednesday, April 5th, and Tony Romo cannot hurt you Cowboys fans anymore.
I love the stage that we're already jumping into with Tony Romo because we're already at legacy talk.
Yeah.
And here's, I'll give you right now Tony Romo's legacy. You don't have to read anything else. He is the most fun quarterback to hate of all time. That's his legacy.
Yes.
That's what it is. He broke your heart if you're a Cowboys fan, but for everybody else, so if you're not a Duke, Yankees, Lakers fan, I'm not talking to you, but everyone else, he was the most fun quarterback to watch fail.
We also are a little biased because, in full disclosure, Tony Romo had a conference call with CBS, and we called in. We had our questions ready to go, and we sat there for an hour and 20 minutes while they didn't let us ask a question.
I think we got punked.
We got
CBS. So CBS is on our shit list, and so is Tony Romo.
So our questions were going to be mostly about his hat, his blue hat, the free Pizza Hut hat that he wears everywhere with Jason Garrett. By the way, weirdest coach quarterback friendship of all time, Jason Garrett and Tony Romo. They were together a lot.
Yeah, and I think it was just because they were so boring that nobody else wanted to hang out with them.
Yeah, well, Jason Witten, too.
And Jason Witten. Oh, yeah. Right. He's a real firecracker.
Right, exactly. So Tony Romo retiring. I'm using air quotes right now. Retiring to go into the broadcast booth is kind of the biggest news story this week. I think he's going to play another snap.
I think you're probably right. He didn't close the door on it.
Right.
We asked him several times, and by we, I mean fellow Northwestern graduates on the conference call asked him, like, no chance you're coming back? And he was like 99% sure, which I did the math on those sabermetrics, and the way I see it, that means, okay, so if the Broncos are 6-2 in October, he'll come back for $10 million.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually excited because all the young kids out there who maybe were a little too young for Brett Favre, now you get to relive the whole thing. Is Brett Favre coming back? We actually should get Buss Cook should be Tony Romo's agent now, just so he can fly his private plane around wherever Tony Romo is. Like, Tony's practicing with some high school kids.
I don't think Buss Cook should fly anywhere. I think that Ed Warder should continue to fly down to Mississippi on a helicopter every now and again, and then leave with like half of a scoop.
Yeah.
Brett Favre was a great guy, kind of in the similar vein to Tony Romo, because you loved watching him play when he was kind of dealing with pain,
mm-hmm.
because he'd like go out and he'd throw like five touchdowns with a broken leg.
Yeah.
Brett was smart. He always got a concussion when he got injured, so that's like nature's pain medicine.
Right.
Romo, on the other hand,
and also the pain medicine
that was human's form of nature's pain medicine.
Right.
But Romo, when he got hurt, he just got hurt.
Yes.
So it was a different story watching the two of them play, but it was more fun to watch Tony Romo get emotionally injured.
Yes. Every single year. And so we're going to relive it for all those kids out there. This is going to be Brett Favre 2.0 minus smaller penis and some Crocs. And this will be fun.
You saying that Tony Romo's penis is smaller than
I
Brett
don't
Favre's?
Know. No, minus a smaller penis.
Hank, can we fact check that?
Yeah.
Who's got the bigger dong?
Yeah. So Tony, he's not going to be, I don't think he's going to be very good in the broadcast booth. Well, hot take, Tony Romo is not as, this is the classic media loving the guy who smiled a lot,
mm-hmm.
who had his backwards hat, who answered questions,
mm-hmm.
and was generally likable, because you know what? He was never threatening.
Right.
Never threatening to win a Super Bowl.
That's right. He's been in America's friend zone for the past 10 years.
Right.
That's what it is. Like, Tony Romo's a guy that a casual football fan, you know, yeah, we'll let him take us out to a nice steak dinner, maybe go to a movie or something like that, and then we're coming home and we're texting Tom Brady, you up?
Yeah.
Give me that booty.
Exactly.
Did he get hit with the fappening, or was that just
Rogers? No, that was... I don't think so.
No, Tony Romo, there are no nudes. So.
No, there's no nudes. But there's still time. I'm sure there's some sexting that he could do.
Jessica Simpson probably has a couple of
The fallout, has anyone told Phil Simms yet? I imagine this is like Seinfeld episode when Kramer had to tell Raquel Welch.
Yeah, if they told Phil Simms, would he understand what was going on?
I don't know.
Well, looks like I still got a job, I think.
I'm going to miss Phil Simms, because Phil Simms got into that. Phil Simms for, I'd say, the last... You know, like 2 years ago, Phil Simms was bad, and I don't want to listen to this bad. Then he got into that punch-drunk, laughably bad stage where you would listen to a broadcast for the football, for Jim Nantz, and for what stupid shit Phil Simms would say.
And when it was Phil Simms and Mike Carey on the same broadcast, that was, I'm doing the Italian chef kissing the fingers thing down. It was perfect.
Two dogs staring at each other in a mirror.
I loved it. I loved it so much. Yeah, just barking.
Yeah, just being like, what are you doing?
Phil Simms and Mike Carey were the only two people that I've ever seen that could look at something and then describe something entirely different that happened.
Right.
Well, I think he stepped out of bounds there, and like that was a field goal attempt that hit the upright.
Right, or like the super, super slow-mo showing that he clearly didn't step out of bounds, as Phil Simms saying he did.
Ooh, okay. I can't wait for the very first time Tony Romo has to say whether or not something's a catch on the field. And then Jim,
jokes.
You think Jim will be like, hey, did Dez catch it?
Yeah.
I hope that gets brought up.
Think he's
going to
needle him?
Oh, yeah.
Either way, his legacy, for me... there's the Tony Romo legacy for Cowboys fans and the Tony Romo legacy for the nation.
Mm-hmm.
The Tony Romo legacy for the nation is the greatest Twitter moments of all time. Whenever Tony Romo melted down at any point in a game, it was so nice on Twitter.
Tony Romo interception Twitter was the best Twitter. If you weren't around in like 2013, the real heyday, back in like the traditional days of Tony Romo fucking up.
Five people from the other team.
Yeah, it's like 3rd and 6, and he's on the opponent's like 22-yard line,
mm-hmm.
and they're down by 4, and then he just throws a pick six. It was incredible.
Someone tweeted me that he has the best fourth quarter passer rating, which...
I saw that too. It said, I saw some stat that said that he's actually the all-time leader in fourth quarter comebacks. That's fake news. Well, I don't want to know that that's true, even if it is, because my narrative, frankly, is superior.
Well, here is a narrative that's kind of fake. Everyone considers Tony Romo like this unbelievable player. How many playoff wins all time?
Two.
So it piqued my interest a little bit. I wanted to do an emergency Mount Rushmore. It's not Mount Rushmore season. We're going to do an emergency Mount Rushmore of quarterbacks that have won exactly two playoff games in their career. You want to start? I'll start.
Go for it.
Okay. Number one, Mike Vick. Two playoff wins, but kind of more than two because he beat the Packers in Lambeau, which mm-hmm. apparently you weren't supposed to do until Mike Vick came mm-hmm. along.
So that's like an away goal in soccer. That counts as double.
Right, exactly. Those stupid, you know, UEFA Champions
on
League.
On aggregate, Mike Vick is beating Tony Romo.
Yeah. My next up is Jake Plummer. He went to an AFC Championship game.
Good handball player, too.
Great with the play action pass. Remember how wide Jake Plummer used to run with the play action pass?
Jake Plummer's bootlegs were, yeah. It looked like he was running a 4x400 relay. They were seriously the best when Mike Shanahan was calling those for him.
Yes.
And then he'd be so tired by the time that he threw the ball.
Yes.
And people were like, why can't Jake play into the fourth quarter? Well, because he's running about 1,600 meters per drive.
Yes. Rex Grossman, people forget he actually went to a Super Bowl, even though he had very little to do with that. Mm-hmm. And bonus, there still was some excitement. Rex Grossman couldn't do basically anything well except when he went back, when he reached back and threw that deep ball. That was exciting.
You knew you were dealing with either catastrophe
yes,
or something
right.
crazy. Yes.
A suspenseful moment. And then my final one is Dante Culpepper. Dante Culpepper gave hope to all fat guys everywhere that if you have a rocket arm mm-hmm. and a little swag, his celebration.
Yeah,
let's
the traveling
do it right now.
Motion.
Bad radio, Dante Culpepper.
I just threw a TD. And then you roll. It also helps to have Randy Moss in your team.
Yeah, it does help to have the greatest wide receiver of all time catching balls for you.
I'll say this. If I'm the Dolphins, I still take Dante Culpepper.
Yes.
Because you know how much money the Saints have paid Drew Brees? He's been a fucking cap nightmare
yeah.
over the last 10 years.
Well, Dante Culpepper is also one of those guys that if you're like, Dante Culpepper sniffing a comeback, I'd be like, I'd kick the tires.
Yeah. It's him and Byron Leftwich.
He was never a good body guy. He just could throw,
just bring
throw
him in.
Forever. Yeah.
I would just bring him in and just be like, hey, throw it as far as you can.
Yeah, right.
Five times for me. And then
cool.
I just sit there and be like, that was awesome.
That was awesome. All right, PFT, you go. This is Mount Rushmore of quarterbacks that won exactly two playoff games.
Power okay. rankings?
Nope.
No, it's emergency Mount Rushmore. So okay.
Tony Romo doesn't retire every day, although yeah. soon we'll be able to
will.
Say that he does.
Yes.
Yeah,
retire
every day.
Comes back and then gets
retires
injured again.
Every day, yeah.
Yeah. So mine, I had Mike Vick too. I think
okay.
we probably all had Mike Vick.
Yep.
I'd agree.
For a lot of the same reasons you did. Was that game against Minnesota where he made the two guys run into each other?
No,
was that a playoff?
No.
In my head, I count that as that's a playoff moment.
Great moment.
Yeah, it's a signature moment, so I'm going to count that.
Joe Namath. Sure that wasn't the playoffs?
No, I'm pretty sure that wasn't the playoffs.
I'm pretty sure it was.
Ooh, fact check.
Okay, fact check me, Hank.
Number two, Joe Namath. People
oh,
forget, Joe
wow,
Namath only
fuck.
Won two playoff games.
That's a wild stat.
And people also don't talk a lot about the fact that he guaranteed that Super Bowl.
Yes.
He was the guy that guaranteed
at the pool.
It. At the pool.
At
playing
the pool.
It cool with Brent Musburger.
Yeah.
That was the playoffs.
The Minnesota game? Minnesota-Atlanta?
You were thinking of the end of the Playmakers season where they had the guy that was clearly supposed to be Mike
Fuck,
Vick.
Man.
He won in week 16, and then that took them into the playoffs. So.
What an awesome show that was.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
My number three is Alex Smith, the Storm and Mormon.
Nice.
Now, his book is not finished yet.
Yep.
But it seems like Alex Smith might be destined to lose one playoff game for the next 6 years.
Yes, I agree.
So I'm just going to count him as having two playoff wins of all time.
I like that.
And without even looking at it, I'm going to guess that they're against the Texans, and we'll go with the Bengals.
Nope, it was the regular season.
Thank you. I knew that.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah,
plot
thanks.
Twist again.
I typed in Mike Vick playoff Vikings,
had,
and the video showed up. So
okay.
No,
I assumed
I knew that was regular season.
M. Night Shyamalan
yeah.
producing this show here.
Yeah.
Okay, my fourth is Frank Reich.
I need a moment for that joke. That was a good one.
Okay, I didn't write that one down.
No, you didn't.
My fourth was Frank Reich.
Okay.
And Bill Polian called him the best backup quarterback of all time. So he's doing double duty, like you had Rex Grossman
mm-hmm.
on this one, also on your backup quarterback, Mount Rushmore.
Right.
Frank Reich, he won two playoff games, including the biggest playoff comeback of all time.
True.
Also, the only Reich that can win on the road in January.
I was about to say, you picked it because of his name. But that the biggest playoff comeback is definitely, that deserves to be in the Mount Rushmore. Hank?
All right, I got Vic, obviously.
Yep.
Madden 2004. Did you have Jake the Snake Plummer?
I did.
Oh, okay.
You weren't listening.
Nope. Culpepper, for obvious reasons.
Okay, so Hank's on my list. Can he complete the list?
And Rich Garcia, because his...
Jeff okay. Garcia?
Jeff Garcia.
Jeff Garcia, okay.
Hank is not in Mount Rushmore season.
For a second, I thought that Rich Garcia was like some lesser-known guy on the Patriots in the 80s that I never heard of.
Jeff Garcia's wife was like my first crush.
Yes. And
oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was
wife?
A playmate.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Hank was into cucking before cucking was cool. All right. That's notice Tony Romo was not on our Mount Rushmore.
Because Tony Romo was going to come back and win a wild card game with the Texans.
Pretty shocking for all the accolades Tony Romo has been, like, everyone slobbering over his career. He won two playoff games.
Mm-hmm. Bonus, two. Joe Namath.
Oh,
people forget, he only won two playoff games.
Yes, okay, good job.
All right.
I think the best analogy I can make to Tony Romo is he is the Gerald Ford of quarterbacks. He's a nice enough guy, and you love to watch him just, like, run his crotch into things.
Yes. I'd agree. Do we want to talk about the national championship game? I'm not angry anymore. We were on our text chain, and mm-hmm. I was like, actually wanted to punch someone because the refs ruined it so much.
You also had Gonzaga.
Yeah, but that actually had nothing to do with it, because I was texting you when Gonzaga was up. It was just, they ruined the game. The refs ruined the game, and I can't stand when they do that, especially college basketball is the worst of all the sports.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, everyone who watched that game was like, that sucked.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I had UNC, not to brag,
mm-hmm.
and the game was a little bit better for me.
Did you feel a little dirty?
I didn't feel dirty. I felt pretty good.
You felt dirty that they fouled out the best player on the court for basically two non-fouls?
No, I felt dirty when my previous three bets had lost.
Yeah.
So I was okay with winning this one. So I was fine with it. And what we can determine from this is length does not beat size.
Yeah.
As big predicted.
Ass. Kennedy makes big ass. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to have to eat my hat or eat my column, as a journalist would do. Roy Williams, not so bad. Three national titles in 15 years.
Yeah.
I'm putting my hand up and say he's okay.
I'm not going to put one in his ear hole, but I'm going to do a brush back on Roy Williams because he said damn.
Ooh.
I don't know if you heard that last night after the game.
Yikes.
He let the D word slip out and said the daggum.
Yikes.
These daggum fellers. Come on, fellers.
Roy, he's getting a little loose with it now.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's do...
You roll back the bathroom bill in North Carolina, all of a sudden there's potty language flying everywhere.
Yeah,
You got any 2019?
Yeah, I was going to say
2019 predictions.
Well, let's do our 2018 national title.
Bracketology?
I'll say 2019.
Okay.
Ooh, 2019. Okay. I'm going to go with Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with Duke.
Oh, we're going Final Four.
I'm going to go Kentucky. And
I was just going champion.
Then I'm going to go with Georgetown.
Okay.
Patrick Ewing.
Patrick Ewing.
Georgetown's back.
Yeah. I'm going to go with whatever team Tom Crean's coaching, because he beat North Carolina.
UConn women's team then.
Oh. Would you imagine if Tom Crean coached women's basketball? That would be great.
He can't kiss any of those players on the lips, so he won't do it.
Well, he can. It's a player
little,
coach.
Little Tyler Summit situation.
Jesus.
I like San Diego State.
Oh, okay.
They got a decent class this year, great class in 2 years.
Super relatable.
Yeah.
Let's do our hot seat, cool throne, because it is Wednesday. Who wants to start on this?
I'll start. My hot seat is the award-winning listeners.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Maybe not award-winning listeners come summer, but we put out a tweet saying this tweet gets 69 retweets by 3 o'clock. We'll release the name of the guest for today's show. Mm-hmm. The award-winning listeners fell apart, had it at like 75 retweets, couldn't get it down.
It was amazing to watch. We were watching live and just refreshing. Just couldn't get it together. Couldn't get enough people to unretweet that thing. It mm-hmm. was fantastic to watch.
It's a nice social experiment.
Yeah. I think a lot of people just didn't know. It was one of two things. People either didn't know that you could unretweet your retweet, or people wanted to be one of the 69 people that retweeted it.
Right.
And so they're just being stubborn. In which case, I think stubbornness, isn't that one of the seven deadly sins?
Mm-hmm.
So you guys can enjoy hell.
Yeah.
Hope it was worth it.
But my cool throw-in is also the award-winning listeners.
Ooh, twist.
Raised $50,000 in 10 hours.
We should actually talk about that for a little bit here. That was absolutely incredible. I was blown away. We all internally thought we're going to get it, probably take 2 days, 3 days. The fact that we got it in literally 10 hours,
mm-hmm.
$50,000, is unbelievable.
You guys have the clutch gene.
It's a testament to how loyal our listeners are and how much they love charity, giving to charity.
Yes. I just want to also assure everybody that all precautions are being taken with this money. Nothing bad's happening to it.
Would be a real shame, though.
It'd be a real shame if somebody were to take all that money and go live in the West Indies for... Mm. 3 months.
Yeah, we were actually talking about like, if we just took this $50,000 and went to Mexico, it's like, we'd
have to stop at Atlantic City on the way. And
you're gonna need a lot of beer in Mexico. Get thirsty.
I think we'd make it to Pennsylvania.
We'd get about 3 weeks, maybe, on $50,000.
But no, to be honest, the charity money is being taken care of.
Yes.
It might be, you know, a couple weeks before we present JJ with the check.
Yeah.
But I think what we'll end up doing is sending him the money, sending his foundation as soon as it reaches our account.
Yep.
Sending it out, and then we'll present JJ with a very, very large oversized check that he won't know
the
what
largest
to do with.
Novelty check you've ever seen. Yeah, we're working out exactly a date, so everyone just be patient. We're going to try to get it done as soon as possible. My guess, like an estimate here, is probably within the next month. Mm-hmm. So just expect it then. And like I said, we're gonna be doing a lot of content around it.
Mm-hmm.
So get excited. It's going to be awesome. And thank you again from the bottom of our hearts. And for those who didn't donate, hope you feel good about yourself.
Mm-hmm. Enjoy
jerks.
The free content that you're going to be getting.
Jerks. Hmm. All right, who's your hot seat, Kultron?
My hot seat is Hold Music.
Mm.
I can't stand Hold Music. A little background. Lost my card briefly, my credit card, a couple weeks ago. Got it back. It was compromised. Had to cancel my card, get a new one. So what does that do? All the stuff I had on auto pay, because I don't pay any bills. I'm a guy.
Of course.
Guys don't sit down. Guys don't write checks.
No, we keep our money under the mattress.
Yeah, exactly. So all my auto pay stuff has been coming back delinquent. So
fuck.
I've had to call a lot of utilities. And what I've noticed, it's all the same song that they have on their Hold Music. Do you want to hear it?
Mm-hmm.
I've actually been working on an impression of it. It goes...
That was great.
That's every single Hold song of all time. I want to actually come up with like a rap beat out of it.
Okay.
And then put some bars down, so next time you're on Hold, you can flow with it.
Yeah.
So maybe turn a negative into a positive.
That auto pay thing is, that's brutal. Yeah. I've gone through that. I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
Is it one of those things, though, you just hate it because it's the Hold Music? Like, if you set a song as your alarm clock,
well, yeah, if it
you
was
hate
a,
that song.
If it was a sex hotline.
This is your Spotify list.
Yeah, if I was calling like a sex number, every time I'd hear that Hold Music, I would get a boner. I'd love it. It's like the dog. But now every time I hear it, it's just more money I have to pay, so I hate it.
That's a good call, Hank. Actually,
Pavlov.
Now that I'm thinking about this, if our buddy Lenny is on
Rorschach.
Some hard times, he should just be the Hold Music. Just do some locker room talk. If he's just sitting there taking calls all day.
You guys should have invested your money with me. I would have made $600 out of your money. Hey, who is this?
Cool Throne.
My Cool Throne is Hooky.
Okay.
It's Hooky season.
Yes.
So baseball starts up. You have all these day games out there. There's nice weather. You've got spring break coming up too.
That's false?
No, it's not. It's not false at all. New York has spring break next week, bro.
Oh, you mean like high schools and stuff. Got it.
Yeah, so all I'm saying is commitments are on the hot seat.
Mm-hmm.
Hooky is on the cool throne. There's no better feeling than watching baseball during the day on your couch. Just because you decided not to go to work that day.
Right.
Or skipping school and going to a game with your dad. It's the best.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Hank?
Wow.
You want to apologize for that?
Nope.
No, I'm just saying. I'm just talking about a personal experience.
Yeah.
Talking about how much
he loves his dad.
Yeah. Where your dad did a really nice thing for you and took
you
out of school.
Don't be upset because Hank's dad...
And then he probably bought you ice cream afterwards.
Yeah.
It was a great time.
Hank and his dad have a good relationship. Don't be mad about that.
I have a great relationship with my dad.
My hot seat is people who like both hockey and basketball.
This is a really
bad couple months here. If you tweet about an NBA game, there's hockey on, bro, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
If you're tweeting about hockey, hey, the Cavs are playing. So, pick a side. Stick with that side. You cannot possibly, as a human being with a brain, like two things at one time.
Nope.
It's a war. It's a war. Be careful out there. And then my cool throne, college kids. Because during the national championship, LeBron said that it was so bad he wasn't going to watch. And then he took it back. And he said he will watch the rest because he doesn't want to cheat the kids.
Mm, the kids, yeah.
So guess what, college kids? LeBron watched that national championship game for you.
That's right. When he was 18 years old, he was a kid too, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no, he was a professional.
He was a man-child.
He's a man-child.
Yeah, he was a man-child.
Still is a man-child.
Not anymore.
Yeah. One thing dawned on me the other day about the NCAA. If you're LeBron James and you're so great at giving all this money to charity, why don't you go to college and earn money for the NCAA? It's a nonprofit for 4 years.
True.
So I guess you don't like charity as much as we thought you did.
LeBron, though, like that couldn't have been a more LeBron tweet to be like, you know what? I will watch for the kids. Thanks, LeBron. We were worried for a second that you wouldn't be watching this game.
I was hoping for an Instagram update of him turning his TV off and then saying, you know what? The right thing to do would be to turn this television back on.
Yeah, like his wife's like, LeBron, put that back on. You got to watch it for the kids. He's like, oh, fuck. fine for the kids.
For the kids,
that's there. Like what LeBron thinks about in his brain. Mm-hmm. His brain is so fucked up.
Mine is just, I do everything for the troops.
Yeah.
So I got to go rub one out for the troops.
For the troops. For they, America. They fought would, for us so that we
my
could
right
jerk off.
To jerk off to whatever I want, whenever I want.
Right. All right. Let's go to our interview. We interviewed Theo Epstein, so you're probably saying, I saw a couple St. Louis folks mad because we've had a couple Cubs
you
on.
You think?
Yeah. If you couldn't figure out by now, we went down to Phoenix. We were able to get some access to the Cubs, and we interviewed Schwarber, Rizzo, and now Theo Epstein. It was a great interview. And here's a little throw out there to everyone. Any franchise out there that wants to give us access, we'll come.
Mm-hmm.
We will come, and then we'll come again.
That's a promise. We will come wherever you tell us
right,
to come.
Right, exactly. It doesn't matter.
Nope. You don't even have to clean up after us.
Yeah. In your hair? Fine. We'll come.
Yeah.
So just throwing it out there. So if you are an award-winning listener who has access to a franchise, a player, or anything, our DMs are open. Mm-hmm. Hook it up. We will interview anyone, anywhere, anytime.
Well, that's not true. We will interview many people.
Yeah, that's true.
Anywhere.
Yeah, there's some people we won't interview.
Yeah, a couple guys out there. You know who you are.
All right, so let's do that. Theo Epstein.
TJ.
Before we get to the interview, I want to talk to you guys quickly about DraftKings.com. The stage is set for the first golf major of 2017, and it all begins this Thursday in Augusta, Georgia. To celebrate, DraftKings.com is hosting a free fantasy golf contest with $100,000 in total prizes up for grabs. Whether you live and breathe golf or you're looking to try a new fantasy sport, 1 week fantasy golf at DraftKings is for you. Just pick six golfers before the tournament tees off Thursday morning, then sit back and follow the action live. Rack up those points, and you can win if you outscore your competition. Remember, the tournament starts this Thursday morning, so hurry to DraftKings.com right now, right this second. Pause the podcast, go to DraftKings.com, get free entry in the $100,000 contest for golf's first major with promo code BIGCAT. That's code BIGCAT to play for free for your share of $100,000 in total prizes this Thursday, only at DraftKings.com. Eligibility restrictions may apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Better Call Saul is back, folks. You can follow Jimmy McGill's devolution from a small-time attorney to Breaking Bad Saul Goodman on Better Call Saul. The series takes place roughly 5 years before the Saul Goodman meets Walter White. Saul is Jimmy McGill. Jimmy is more or less a law-abiding small-time attorney hustling to champion his underdog clients, build his practice, and somehow make a name for himself. And it's coming back Monday, April 10th at 10, 9 Central, only on AMC. Season 3 also sees the return of Gus Fring. You remember him, the chicken man. Makes delicious chicken. Makes delicious meth. Best character. I love Gus Fring. He's back. You're going to get to see Mike Armantrout. Mike Armantrout squaring off against all the bad guys. He's a really fun dude to root for. It's coming back Monday, April 10th. That's 10, 9 Central on AMC.
All right, we are here in Arizona with the Wonder Boy.
Boy Wonder,
the genius, the GOAT. Can we call you the GOAT?
I'm not going to call myself the GOAT.
Okay, the GOAT, if you can recognize that voice, it is Theo Epstein, curse breaker. Again, genius, master of sabermetrics. Mm-hmm. What else?
Keep going.
Billy Bean's boss.
Master of my
domain. Stat sheet kisser.
Yeah. Nerd. Big time nerd.
Spreadsheet haver.
Skinny Jewish kid.
Yeah, yes. You're doing... you hit a home run off Ryan Dempster. It's still going. Still, the ball hasn't landed yet. Oh, you're doing the Yale commencement speech.
Yep.
You ready for that?
I will prepare for, unlike this.
Okay. All right. So Theo Epstein on the show. This is a huge get for us. We appreciate you sitting down with us. My first question, I even wrote it down. Are you still drunk?
No. The bender officially came to an end.
How long did it last for?
A month.
It was a full month?
It was a good month. Yeah, we had a... My wife threw a big party for us towards the end of January, so I guess it was technically about 3 months.
Okay.
That was the end of it.
Okay.
And then you got the holidays, so those don't even count. Like, everybody was drunk for the holidays anyways.
Right, exactly. So all that. So now a real question is, is it like, where do you go from here? Where do you've done it all. You have literally done it all. Anyone like myself, I'd get complacent. I get complacent after, like, one good podcast. Do you have trouble like getting up and be like, yo, I broke two curses, what am I gonna do now?
No, I mean, we won one World Series in 108 years, so
it's pretty big one.
Yeah, but a lot of motivation to go do it again, and I'll just show up to this beautiful place for work, and if we don't win, I'll blame Jed, and if we do, I'll take all the credit and ride off into the sunset.
Right. Yeah. So coming off all this success, how much of it is trying to replicate what you've done for the last couple of years, and how much of it is trying to like reevaluate and find something new, that like a new edge that you can gain?
That was a serious question.
We're going to do a couple of those. You mean, we're big journalists.
You mean coming off the World Series?
Yeah, this is how we lull you into social security here.
Just going through it in Boston, I think if you just expect everyone to show up and have the same great chemistry, it's gonna change anyway. So our approach this year has just been to be open and talk about the things that helped make us a great team last year, the connectedness in our clubhouse, everyone kind of buying into the team concept, putting the team's interests before their own. So we've been talking about that and asking everyone to opt back in to that team concept so we can kind of, again, be part of something bigger than ourselves.
What's on the whiteboard for the big need? Because last year it was relief pitching, and it was, you know, obviously the Chapman deal at the trade deadline. What is this year's, we got to get this, we got to be, you know, always present about this need?
I think that'll reveal itself during the course of the season. You know, I think
you already have that.
No,
you just don't want to tell me.
We feel pretty good about where we're at, but, you know, you can never have enough starting pitching depth, and if a guy or two go down, we're definitely going to be on the lookout for a legit starter.
Can we just start by I want to know, is what was the transaction that you're the most proudest of, or the most proud of over the last couple of years, like where you've really pulled one over on another general manager? When have you trade cucked somebody?
When have we what?
Trade cucked.
Trade cucked somebody?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, you don't want it to be that way. I mean, honestly, I don't know. I mean, the Feldman for Arrieta and Strope one was pretty good, just because Stropey was kind of a throw-in in that, and he's ended up being a real important setup guy for us. We didn't see Jake blossoming like he did. I mean, we thought he had a chance to start. We thought his floor was a pretty good reliever, and he went out and had the most dominant season ever. So that one was kind of a best-case scenario. And then Hendricks, that was kind of a cool transaction because shows how smart we are. We were trying to trade Dempster for Randall Delgado the whole time, and we were kind of heartbroken when that one fell apart. And then we had a last-minute deal come together with the Rangers, and there was a whole group of prospects, kind of just lower mid-level guys that we had graded out the same. And the reason we chose Hendricks is because we'd done some digging, and a guy we trusted who'd coached him before had said, hey, this guy has the best makeup we've ever been around. He's really smart. He works really hard. He's going to get the absolute most out of his ability. So just take this dude if they're all the same. So we took him for that. And sure enough, it's not his arm strength that's gotten him where he is. It's his head and his ability to make adjustments and continue to grow as a pitcher. So it's cool to see that one little piece of information lead, take a fringe prospect. All of a sudden you end up with a guy who's third in the Cy Young Award.
So how much of, that's interesting because obviously you're well known for the numbers and sabermetrics and, the revolution in baseball numbers. But it obviously sounds like Kyle Hendricks was something not on the stat sheet.
Yeah, definitely not. We put a lot of emphasis on makeup and what makes guys tick. The numbers thing, we put a lot of time and energy into getting the right kind of data and analyzing it, but it's a totally different industry than it was 15 years ago. 15 years ago, when I was first starting, you could just by looking at something simple like valuing on base percentage instead of batting average. My first year in Boston, we needed to add some cheap hitters. We got David Ortiz for $1.25 million, Bill Miller for like $2 million, Kevin Millar was on his way to Japan.
Right.
There were so many obvious inefficiencies in the market, you could kind of use numbers to just do some serious damage. Now, 15 years later, everyone has ridiculous amounts of information. Everyone's looking at the same numbers. Everyone's hiring these smart kids from Ivy League schools to with advanced math degrees to like dice up the numbers. So as a result, it's the landscape is super flat. It's really hard to get an advantage with just the numbers. So the ironic thing about that is it's kind of swung the pendulum back, where I think the biggest competitive advantage now is actually understanding players as human beings, what makes them tick, getting the right kind of guys, building the right kind of chemistry, and then treating them the right way so that the team can take off. And we still dig deep for numbers. We do all this neuroscience stuff, and you have to just dig incredibly deep to find something that the other 29 teams don't already have.
So you're saying you might bring David Eckstein back? Is that what you're saying?
I don't think he's the next market inefficiency, no.
Okay. All right.
So we like the guys
we
have.
You did it also in the draft because, with the way you've built the Cubs, you basically only drafted hitters. And people, you know, there was many times where the media, the fans said, like, where the hell is the starting pitching going to come from? And that kind of fell into place. Is that, like, something where you consciously were like, all right, if we draft hitters and everyone else keeps drafting these high school pitchers that are going to blow out their arms, we'll be ahead of everyone?
We didn't really care what everyone else was going to do, but we made a conscious choice. We felt like in a big market, if you're rebuilding, you probably only have one chance to get it right. Mm-hmm. You know, we knew if we drafted a bunch of guys who blew out their arms, you know, we weren't going to ask for five more years.
Right.
People weren't going to wait around. So the best bets in the first round are position players. They return on average about twice as much value as pitchers. And if we were going to put our resources, whether it was a high first round pick or like a big trade when we got Addison Russell or Rizzo, we wanted to do it with position players, build a big nucleus of young, talented position players who have really high character as well and build around them. And we knew because of that, we'd have to kind of figure out the pitching year to year. And we're still vulnerable a little bit depth-wise because of that. But it helped hitting on Arrieta, hitting on Hendricks, signing Lester. And the other benefit of building around position players is they impact kind of the identity of your organization, the chemistry of your club more because they're on the field every day.
Mm-hmm.
If you draft a starting pitcher in the first round, best case he's on the field once out of every 5 days. It's just easier for position players like Bryant and Rizzo and Schwarber and all these guys to help kind of define your identity as a team by being on the field every day.
Yeah, you mentioned 15 years ago the game was a little bit different in terms of what it is that you do. Were you pissed off at Billy Beane for having them write Moneyball? Like, wasn't that kind of a dick move to give away all the secrets?
He didn't write Moneyball.
Like, even Jesus waited for somebody else to write the book about him. You know?
No, it was Michael Lewis who wrote the book.
Right, but he opened up the A's front office.
Yeah, he let him have all the information.
I know he didn't write it, but he just kind of gave away all the secrets.
Yeah, I think he was just doing what I'm doing right now. He's actually started out as like a magazine article, so he was just cooperating with a writer doing a magazine piece, and then it kind of got a life of its own. But, you know, that
you're saying we're going to write a book?
Yeah, we're not book guys.
So.
We'll write a Wikipedia page.
Several syllables at a time. Yeah, you guys are going to write that book. Yeah, but it was interesting what happened. When Moneyball came out, you know, it hit the New York Times bestseller list. And who reads bestsellers? Like rich dudes on their yachts who are the same guys who own baseball teams.
Right.
So they all read the book. Then they started looking at their GMs. I was like, what the hell are we doing?
Right.
This is what Oakland's doing, and they're having success. So it really did. It was an example of the media kind of changing the way the game operates because – they started asking questions and went from maybe five teams having stat guys or stat departments to now 30 in the span of just a few years that happened.
Interesting. During the 5-year plan, was there ever a moment where Ricketts was like, this isn't working? Or was there ever a moment internally where you're like, this isn't working?
Because
it's like you did it almost to a day. I know you obviously know. I think the day you were hired was 5 years later was, I think, the day that the Cubs – clinched to the World Series
against the Dodgers.
So so it was like a 5-year plan that was truly a 5-year plan, and it worked seamlessly. But was there ever a moment where you're like, this isn't going to work? This is all falling apart.
There were some moments right before. When was it? I guess it was right before we drafted Bryant. Mm-hmm. Like a year and a half in or so, when it felt like we were at the bottom of a well. We're like, where the hell are we going to get 6 to 8 impact players that you need? You know, we barely have one, and there's only one draft per year. So you get one first-round pick per year. There's one trade deadline, and we were kind of running out of assets at the big league level that we could spend. So there are some moments where, like, we better get lucky quick.
Like Brian LeHair is actually we can't do this.
We're going to start feeling the heat. But then a lot of things clicked all at the same time. Actually, in 14, we had a span. Remember when Rizzo – Chapman was throwing at a couple of our guys, and Rizzo went over and challenged the Reds.
Yeah,
so that was kind of like a galvanizing moment at the big league level. And right before that, we had drafted Schwarber. Bryant was like hitting bombs every night in the minor leagues. Arrieta was starting to blossom. We traded for Addison Russell July 4th of that year. So like a lot of good things started to happen within a few weeks span. And then we kind of finished strong after that incident in Cincinnati in 2014.
Yeah, like it was like 500.
Soler and Baez came up. We kicked the Cardinals. We played well against the Cardinals, won one series in St. Louis.
Kicked their ass.
And then that was
direct
important.
Quote.
Yeah.
It created momentum. So instead of being real conservative again in that offseason because we weren't quite there, we said, you know what? The young guys are getting here. We have a chance to be good. And then all of a sudden, Joe Maddon became available. We signed John Lester. We traded for Dexter Fowler, and everything kind of came together quicker than we imagined it would.
Did you make Jed fire Ricky Renteria?
We did it together, but he did get the shitty assignment of having to go out. While I went to meet with Joe, Jed had to fly out and talk to Ricky in person.
So you did.
Because we couldn't both be there at the same time.
Right.
And yeah. Jed had a personal relationship with Ricky pre-existing from the San Diego days. Mm-hmm. So we thought that, oh, Kevin Euclid sighting. Come on through.
Hey, Euclid.
What's up, Euclid?
Yes. How's it going?
Team.
Oh, how you doing?
That's Kevin Euclid's exclusive interview. Euclid's
turned down a coaching job with Team Israel, and now they're undefeated, and he's regretting his place in Jewish history.
Miracle on,
passed him by.
Yeah, yeah. You were talking about the World Baseball Classic earlier. How do you feel about having players in it?
It's cool. I kind of like the WBC. You know, you get nervous when your starting pitchers are out there, maybe ramping it up a little bit earlier than they normally would. But we weren't hit hard by it this year. Hobby's kind of the only guy, and he showed up in great shape, ready to go. So. Mm-hmm.
So this is some like dumb fan stuff that we get in our heads. Javi obviously was the
as
one
opposed
guy.
To
yeah,
your
well,
earlier questions.
I have smart stuff too, but Javi was obviously the one guy who was from the Hendry years, so before you.
And Wilson Contreras.
And Wilson Contreras. So did you ever like be like, we got to get rid of this guy because he's not our guy? You don't want Javi to have like the walk off home run in the World Series and be like, yeah. Jim Hendry really actually deserves this
no,
World Series.
We weren't good enough to think that way. Okay. We were now
I actually like thought if, that I was like, he's gonna trade Javi because it's not his guy.
No. If we were kind of rolling in talented young players and stuff, maybe we could have been wicked selfish and done something like that. But no, that's bad karma if you start thinking that way.
All right, that's fair.
Thanks for planting the seed, though. Now I'm going to shop
yeah,
those
yeah,
guys.
Now think yeah, about make it. Start saying better. That way.
People were talking about how unbelievable Javi and Wilson were and how they weren't your draft picks.
So. Yeah, and first one to thank Jim Hendry and his crew for finding those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And
there we go. Class act right here.
All the job.
Way to go.
But he's putting those dark thoughts in your head, so they'll start creeping and taking over the rest of your brain soon. I'm wondering like about your process. Do you watch every game? During the regular season?
Yeah, just about. So of the 81 home games, I'm probably there for 75 of them and then maybe miss half a dozen if I'm out scouting for the draft or seeing a minor league team or something. And then I don't travel on the road nearly as much as I used to. When I was first starting out as a GM, I thought I had to be there all the time. But honestly, it's kind of eyewash. You know, when you're traveling on the road, you're not doing much. You're checking in with a trainer. We make sure someone goes. We divide up the road games between the five of us. And then that gives you more of an opportunity to get stuff done back home. Obviously, you watch every game on TV. And
do you get mad that Joe Buck is so clearly biased against the Cubs?
I don't know. I don't end up watching the playoff games on TV. So right, I heard people were pissed at him. But I think every fan base probably thinks, except St. Louis,
that's true.
Probably thinks he's biased against their team.
What's it like in the box, though? Because it's just you and your guys watching every game.
Most of the time, it's fun. It's just a bunch of... You know, guys, hey, it's probably somewhat similar to
little locker room
your
talk,
office.
Maybe?
Little locker room talk. Not Trumpian locker room
okay,
talk, but normal locker room talk.
Yeah.
No. most of the time it's relaxed and fun, and we're, you know, kind of joking around with each other, and we have, like, competitive eating contests and just random stuff, bets here and there flying around. But then when things are going poorly it's a bit of a mess. Jed in particular, it's like nine innings of pain watching the game with him. When things are going
bad. Why, is he a complainer? What does he do?
Yeah, he's just
doom and gloom.
He starts throwing his phone around and, like, complaining. But, no, it's good. And we have little traditions. Like, when we need runs, this one kid, Scott Harris, who I think, you know, we make him start eating, like, cake and loaves of bread and hot sauce and stuff.
I could be that guy for you if
we had some
that.
Kids at the lunch table in high school that we did that to. We didn't really like them, though.
Yeah.
We just kind of made him eat for our own entertainment.
But if Scott ever wants to stop doing that, I could definitely just be the bread guy.
You look like you've been generating some runs over the years.
Yeah, a few runs. I'm actually the best offense in the league.
Yeah, you could say that he was a key contributor last year.
Exactly.
Thank you.
When you who's your favorite draft pick? I know the answer to this, by the way, because you told it to me once off the record.
No, that's fine. We're pretty proud of the Schwarber pick just because he was. I'm not going to lie to you because
you
he
said it like right next to Rizzo too. That was the best part. Rizzo was saying
it was
right
before
next
he
like,
became
Schwarber's
good,
my favorite
right?
Draft pick ever.
It was just because he was seen by the industry as, you know, second round guy at best because of his body and maybe some defensive limitations. But we were just so convicted about the bat and we thought he was one of the best young hitters we'd ever seen, and then the person we like. Just felt like we wanted him to be one of those guys like Anthony and like Brian, right in the middle of what we're doing for a long time.
Are you worried at all about his defense? You think that's overblown?
No, I think it's overblown. I think he'll be average out there and left. You know, he boxed those two balls against the Mets when everyone was watching. Yeah, right, so everyone thinks he's brutal. So I'll actually probably surprise some people who haven't seen him play since then.
See, it sounds a lot smarter coming from you because I kept on saying that. It was like he went from college as a catcher in the minor league to playing the NLCS in the left field in like 12 months. And then he obviously had those two balls, and everyone's like, well, you can't win with Schwarber and left.
We'll try to prove that wrong this year.
Were you shocked when he came back for the World Series? We actually broke that news, by the way.
Did you really?
Six months before we had...
it was like a week after he tore his ACL.
A week after he tore his ACL, we had a guy named James Andrew who has a PhD in like information sciences on the show.
Dr. James Andrews.
Uh-huh. And we asked him if Schwarber could come back for the World Series. He's like, yeah, probably.
So you're counting that as breaking the news?
Yeah. Well, it was 6 months before you broke it.
Did we have Dr. James Andrews say that he could play in the World Series or not?
A little alternative fact.
Okay, well,
fake news,
it's a real fact. Just presented alternatively.
Were you shocked?
I was shocked. Yeah, I mean, because the doctors all along were saying it's a 12-month legit rehab and 8 months at the quickest before you can do anything even baseball related. And then, it stunned the hell out of me. And then to play in two games, actually right here, as he played in two games over there in the fall league, and then in that batting cage over there, he just sat there and tracked 2,000 baseballs a day to get his timing down. Sick. And then
That's
he came
insane.
Back, and we didn't know how he'd do. And then that first at bat, he punched out, but he was right on everything. And then I thought his at bats were incredible the whole World Series.
Yeah,
locked in.
So after that Game 7, it was a legendary game. Did you feel more of a sense of relief, or was it like joy? How long did it take
it was a combo. You know, I felt super. Maybe it's kind of weird. Like I don't feel happy right away after we win. I kind of need to see everyone else enjoying it and celebrating. And then it kind of rubs off on me. The relief was.
That makes you a sociopath.
It does. I know.
You're like,
I need
to mimic their reaction.
No, I need to see.
He's waiting to
see.
Quantify other people's reactions.
No,
or
no.
Happy or sad? We're happy.
No.
Yeah.
I think the relief was more immediate because I hate letting people down.
Right.
So like all along, I'd be like, this is going to be brutal. If I come here to Chicago, obviously, it's to try to win a World Series. Mm-hmm. If I have to leave someday without having won.
Right.
I'll have my freaking tail between my legs, my head, it'll be brutal. I don't want to have to do that someday. And I also maybe don't want to be here the rest of my life. Who knows? You know,
right.
It's a lot. So it was great relief and then tons of joy. And then, you know, the game was so tense. I got drunk in like a minute and a half after the game because I was watching the whole game.
Pussy.
With all my muscles. I was super tense. All my muscles were kind of locked. I didn't realize it watching the game like this. And then the way the ups and downs of the game when we finally won. It was like a bottle of champagne and a beer, and that's when I dropped that F-bomb on TV.
That was great.
Always a big fan of that.
Yeah, I think
you guys would like that.
Well, you can get away with stuff right after. There's that few days.
Absolutely, honeymoon.
What is the biggest difference between the Boston and Chicago media?
That's a great question.
That's a nice trick by you. You got to think about how not to get
what
in trouble
can
here.
I say?
So you say, great question.
What can I say?
Give yourself some time. I just gave you more time.
I think the Chicago media are actually a little bit more chill. Like in Boston, they're maybe out to – it's a little more competitive. They're out to get a scoop. They're out to find the story. They all – you know, it's really competitive. Not saying it's not that way at all here in Chicago, but they seem to be a little bit more – like laid back and let's let the story develop instead of maybe going to break.
Did you
the story.
Wait for Jay Mariotti to leave town before you came to Chicago? You
intimidated
him?
We never crossed paths.
Yeah.
So.
Scared of him?
I don't know enough about him.
That's probably for the best.
Yeah, that actually is for
the
best.
You've accomplished, you know, a lot of great stuff. You've obviously won the two World Series. Would you ever consider a jump to the NFL?
No.
Come on.
No, I think it's insulting even to like
why
talk about it seriously.
You could go in and take over a team and have success.
I don't think so. I think it's insulting to the people who grind their whole careers.
You don't think that'd
scouting football, learning football.
Unbelievable challenge though. Like
it'd be a great challenge.
It's not something you'd be interested in. I mean, you're a challenge guy.
It'd be a great challenge. That's a quote.
A lot of people are saying Theo is not up to the challenge to win a Super Bowl with the Browns.
I think it would take me 10 years to get up to speed, and that I wouldn't do anything where I'm not useful for the first 10 years.
I think the Browns would take a 10-year plan.
What about the Bulls? Can you fix the Bulls?
No, I don't know anything about basketball.
Ooh, so you're a Hillary supporter. Yeah. How would you fix the DNC?
that was kind of awkward when Obama – it was funny, but when Obama – kind of called out the DNC when we were, you guys saw that when we were at the White House.
Yeah.
And said, I don't know, they're in trouble. I just saw some poll numbers the other day where, you know, Trump's popularity is like 40% right now. Mm-hmm. And Bunch of liberals like me all relish that, and then it came out that the popularity of the Democratic opposition right now is like 31%. Yeah. So I guess it's all relative.
Snowflake party.
They have a couple 2 years or just under 2 years to get it right for the midterm elections. Okay. They'll figure it out.
You can fix that.
Sabermetrically, how would you fix it?
Yeah.
What would you look at? What are the first numbers that you would look at?
I have no idea. You know, I've met David Seamus before, who is helping run Obama's foundation now, who is their big pollster during the Obama presidential elections. And it's amazing how great the data is that they use and how predictive it is. And those guys are incredibly smart. So I'm sure they've got it all figured out. So they just have to hire some really good pollsters. And
yeah, the polls were great in 2016.
No, that obviously didn't go according to plan.
Do you have Obama's cell phone number?
Nope. No, I only met him that one day at the White House.
Really?
Yep. I've met him before.
Huh.
Great guy. And he and his wife were both incredibly warm and generous with our whole team. Okay. Even the Republicans had a great day.
All right, let's do some fun questions because we did too many serious questions. Yep. You obviously famously went and had Thanksgiving with Curt Schilling to try to get him to sign with the Red Sox. Yeah. Did you know he was crazy then? Did he show you any memes?
No, he's always been unique.
Yeah,
but that's a diplomatic way to put it.
The best story from that trip was, well, two good stories. One is, so we were negotiating back and forth. He had fired his agent, and he was representing himself. So we're negotiating a contract extension back and forth because we were only going to.
That's a mismatch.
We were only going to make. Yeah, that's what I thought. So I thought we were doing pretty well in the negotiation. Then we reach a deal. We're happy with it, and we go back to print it out in his little home office. And so we're using his computer and his printer to print it out. And there's on his desk is a well-worn, dog-eared copy of the book, Negotiating for Dummies.
Yes.
And that's what he was. Yes. So every time he was pretending to go to the bathroom, he was running back and looking through that book.
Yes, that's like Michael and Scott during Wikipedia.
Shit, you not. And then the other good story is, so we did have Thanksgiving dinner at their house. And Shonda, his wife, was very nice of them to invite us. And she cooked for us. And then I'm sure it was totally unrelated to the food. But it was Jed and me. And Jed got like really sick, so we race back to the hotel, and it's the next morning, we're checking out. Jed is so sick he starts throwing up all around the hotel suite.
Oh my god,
there's like 8 piles of throw up, and we're late for the airport. I had like maybe $200 on me in 20, so I didn't know what to do. We're late, so I just go around each pile of throw up. I throw like a $20 bill. I felt like horrible for the maid.
Oh my god.
So we just threw it out, and we got Jed a mess onto the plane. We got home, but we got Schilling signed, so it was good.
That's fantastic.
You were talking earlier about how you're now starting to look more towards, you know, the makeup of a player as opposed to just the numbers behind him. Mm-hmm. So is that your way of saying that you're thinking about bringing Tebow on board?
I don't think so. I just saw his at-bats the other day.
Yeah. He grounded into a double play, but that drove in a run. So that, how would you evaluate that? It's pretty good, right?
Clutch.
Yeah, I guess he's gotten better.
Clutch bases team, loaded, no outs. He knew that he just needed to get the ball in play.
We were actually one of two teams that didn't go to his tryout.
Oh wow!
Because I think, you know, there's so many good players grinding their asses off in the independent leagues, and you know, who have made it their whole life's work to try to get a shot in pro ball, that we felt, you know, maybe we actually sent the scout to the independent league all-star game, maybe try to find a kid who's been working for years to deserve a shot.
Yeah, actually knows how to play baseball.
Yeah, but hey, more power to him.
But the clutch gene, sabermetrically, define the clutch gene.
That's a long time debate, you know.
It exists.
You can't prove that it exists by the numbers because guys have tried, but I know.
The search for the clutch gene.
I know intuitively, like, there are guys I want up in the big spots, and it's not just the best hitters. Mm-hmm. You know, there are guys who just keep their heartbeat low and kind of thrive in those moments instead of backing away.
Do you think it is because it's funny that you say that, because there are definitely some people out there who just look at the numbers and they're convinced that there's no difference. You are what you are, and like the sample size and everything. But I agree with you. There's clearly. Yeah.
I think if you watch enough sports, you get convinced that like you can kind of tell who's scared and wants that big moment over with and just get out of the play without it coming down on them, and who actually wants the ball, wants to take the big shot, wants the ball hit to them in a big situation. I mean, I just think you can tell. You can't prove it, but you watch enough sports. I mean, you probably have an opinion on it.
Speaking of which, do you think the Cubs win the World Series if that rain delay doesn't happen? Because speaking of rattled and everything, the shots to the dugout.
No.
did not look like the most confident team.
Again, something you can't prove, but I doubt we win without. First of all, if you blow a lead late in any game, it's hard to then come back and win. It's hard to win on the road in extra innings in any game. And we were, I mean, you can't get more extreme than what happened to us. We were 3-run lead, 4 out, no one on base, 4 outs away from winning the first World Series in 108 years, and the game just got away from us like that in a fashion that really, you know, ticked everybody off. And so the guys were shell-shocked, as we all were. And that rain delay, I was lucky. I actually was cutting through the clubhouse because I had to go meet with the commissioner about the radar and how long the rain delay would be. And I caught a little glimpse of our players meeting, and it was awesome. Like, instead of usually during a rain delay, guys just go to their lockers, check their phones, change their jersey. They're just wrapped up in their own stuff. Our players had the instinct, led by Hayward, to come together. And I think that coming together, they rallied each other. They said, "Hey, Chappie, we're going to pick you up. We're going to go out and win. We won 103 games. We're the best team in baseball. We're going to win this thing right here. No one can take this away from us. It doesn't matter what just happened. Schwarber, you're leading off. Like, let's go right here." And then 10 minutes later, they went out and did it. So, obviously, from a narrative standpoint, and I saw it, I buy it. Like, I don't think we win the World Series without that, but you can't prove it.
Are you happy that Hayward was the one that gave the speech so your contract that you gave him doesn't look bad?
I was happy for Jason, yeah, because he had happy for all of us, because maybe we don't win the World Series without that. If you don't perform in the first year of your contract, there's a tendency to, like, detach yourself from the team, because guys get embarrassed when they have huge salaries and they're not performing. And then that can create kind of a death spiral where it gets away from them and they start kind of hiding and isolating themselves. And it's hard to recover from that. Jason, even though obviously he didn't have the year of the bat that he wanted or any of us expected, to his undying credit, like, he stayed right in the middle of the mix all year long. Like, he never backed away from his struggles. He never stopped being vocal. He never stopped being the pro's pro, and his teammates, like, worship him for that. So that's what put him in a position to call a meeting like that, because usually when the guy who's hitting 230 tries to call a meeting, it doesn't go over that well. But when he did it, they were all there in a minute. So, and, you know, look, he's worked so hard at fixing his swing, and he's having, you know, some really good swings here in camp. So I wouldn't sleep on Hayward going forward.
Okay. The free agent death spiral you mentioned, that's basically the Washington Redskins roster for the last 25 years. $50 million a year. Do you join the Redskins as a GM?
I don't know anything about football.
$100 million.
I have a hard enough time in baseball free agency.
$100 million a year. Right now, boom, contract.
No, I don't.
And you become president.
No. Then if I ever take another job, it'll be because, you know, has some there's some real meaning to it for me. It's something I think I can do well.
Doesn't want
to
work for Dan Snyder. Yeah, that's what I hear.
Yeah, I've heard that's interesting. So.
Okay.
All right. You want to do the we got some tweets for
you.
Oh,
yeah, we do a game. You know the Jimmy Kimmel read mean tweets?
Yeah.
So we read mean tweets to our guests.
Okay.
So we got a couple here. The first one is from...
Are these written by Portnoy?
No, these are real. These are real.
I mean real mean Portnoy tweets.
No. We just found them on Twitter. The first one is from at Jed Hoyer is actually the real genius for 2069. He said, "Hey, Theo, I know you're really good, but the fact that you wear Maui Jim sunglasses makes you kind of a douchebag, and they look so stupid on your face."
That's good. I do have a really, like, narrow face, and it's hard to find
fitting
sunglasses.
Right there,
so send me some better sunglasses. Yeah. I'll put them on.
Wow, it's crazy that they knew you wore Maui Jim while we're sitting right here.
This one's from B-Ball Fan 6969. Theo, you look like if Forrest Gump walked into a teleporter with Malcolm in the Middle.
Wow.
I don't know that. What is that?
I don't know.
Okay.
Malcolm in the middle of the show?
Yeah. Like,
the
kid Malcolm? I don't even know what that means. But
yeah. Okay. And then
You're not going to get me on looks, because that's not a big part of my game.
The last one is from at Jed Hoyer _ it's just spanking it. And we know you wrote that, so why don't you just admit it right now?
No, that's...
You wrote that.
It's a great mystery.
No one knows. You wrote it.
I think it's pretty genius, but I'm not I don't know who did it. We'll have to figure it out.
Come on.
But then the next tweet was better when we won the World Series.
Yeah,
you saw that one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I need a hand towel. Hey, cut the camera and just admit it. Just go ahead and admit it.
No.
Okay.
You guys can figure it out. I'll tell you that.
Oh, here's another one. Hey, Theo, do you fuck your spreadsheets?
All right, so that was our mean tweets. We swear those were real tweets. Everyone can go look up and find them. All right, we'll wrap it up. I had three other questions. The first was, do you guys just use Mark Appel as, like, a joke when you're feeling down?
Mark Appel?
Yeah, Appel, you just throw his name out there?
Like, remember that guy? Remember the Astros? Was the Astros took him?
Yeah, no.
Instead of Chris Bryant.
We use it as a reminder to not get too full of ourselves because.
Oh, come on.
No, so, you know, if that draft goes different or they take Bryant, maybe we take Appel and think. You
were going to take him?
You're laughing at us.
Were you going to take him if they took Bryant?
I'm not going to say.
Okay.
There were different opinions in the room on that one.
Ooh, okay. Can you bring Sammy back? Do you have the power? That's actually your next big challenge. Get Sammy Sosa
back. Do you want Sammy back?
Yeah, why not?
Okay. Yeah.
Did you see the interview he did where he said he put Chicago on the map right after
I
Michael
saw
Jordan?
That was interesting. Given the circumstances, that was an interesting move.
The third largest city in the country.
No, I think Tom is handling that one because he's, you know, got the relationship with him and stuff.
Right.
So we'll see what happens. I don't know. Manny Ramirez came to coach for us and did a great job for a couple of years. So it's never say never, but I think there's some things that have to happen.
Okay.
I'm not involved in that one, really.
Okay.
Everyone in the media, for some reason, wants Steve Bartman to come throw out a pitch
at
Wrigley.
Stupid.
Why do you guys think it's stupid?
I think it's stupid because I think the guy's life's already been ruined and leave him alone.
Why are you trying to do it?
No. I agree with you that he should have the right to completely disappear.
It
should just be
alone.
Up to him, whatever he wants to do.
It bothers me when people are like, we have to find Steve Bartman. Like,
put him in the parade.
Through
put him
a
on
ton
the float.
Of stuff.
Yeah,
give If he wants to come back and be public, that's fine. I have a feeling he doesn't, you know, judging by the last decade of him not releasing any statement or anything. But it always bothered me when people are like, yeah, we got to bring him out. It's like, leave him alone.
Actually, when I was flying to Chicago to take the job, I watched on the flight that Catching Hell documentary. I think it was ESPN or somebody. And I obviously knew the story, but I hadn't realized – like how nasty
it was.
It
was bad. It's
for
real
him.
Bad.
Really freaking
it's ugly,
bad. So
ugly, ugly, ugly
spot. He has the right to disappear
fans.
Forever if that's what he wants, or if he wants to come back and kind of get some sort of redemption, he deserves that too. So whatever he wants to do.
All right, last question, and we need your full honesty on this one.
Okay.
All right. Yale, nerd, sabermetrics, computer geek.
This is my epitaph.
Tomorrow morning, you can wake up and be a couple alpha guys like us, real sports guys.
Like guys. Yeah, not a guy that hides behind in his mom's basement.
Not a guy we put in, we give, you know, swirlies to. You trade lives with us, right?
To be in the Barstool office?
No,
working for Portnoy?
To be a sports blogger.
To be a sports guy.
You're not.
That's why I've gone to this charade for 25 years, to try to get the approval of real sports guys like you. So I would definitely do that.
Well, you're getting close.
Yeah.
I'm getting there.
You do something in the NFL.
We're going to have to give you a wedgie after this. Then maybe we'll let you in our
I'm
going to
keep my head down, keep working hard, bring you guys beers when you need them. Maybe someday I'll be let in.
I mean, it's got to be at some point. It's like, you know, you do all your stats and stuff. It's like, man, I wish I was just like a sports guy that has hot takes and can just go by the eyeball test.
You're right, man.
All right. Theo Epstein, the greatest of all time. I can say it.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Greatest nerd.
the world's
net.
Greatest nerd.
He's the net. Greatest nerd all time.
And no matter how many great things you do, you can never be us.
Duly noted.
That interview was brought to you by BetDSI. Major League Baseball is back. The Masters are here, so make sure you go to BetDSI to put some action down. Sports are a lot more fun when you have a little extra incentive to watch, if you know what I'm saying. They are top-rated on most sportsbook review sites. They've been around for over 20 years. They've got a great mobile product that's easy to use from anywhere. You can do live in-game wagering, too, so if you start to fall behind, boom, catch up. Easy as that. You can make plays throughout entire games and events. They have great customer service, available 24/7, 365, and they've built their reputation on fast payment of winnings. Plus, they're going to give you free $25 to try just for registering. And on top of that, a 200% bonus on your first deposit with promo code TAKE200. That's promo code TAKE200 at BetDSI.
All right, let's do some segments. First up, we have a PR 101 with the New Jersey high school that hired Ray Rice and then didn't hire him?
Yeah, so they hired Ray Rice and then they got, I guess there was some blowback to it, which I didn't really see.
Weird.
Why that happened. And then they said, actually, no, he just came to speak to the kids and he's not an official part of our program right now. But he might be around to like give guidance every now and again. But he was definitely going to be affiliated with the team. But my first question is, why didn't the New Jersey team think of this like ahead of time?
Yeah, like, that's a weird. Like, no one's like, hey, that Ray Rice guy. Maybe that won't look so good.
Yeah, I have two suggestions. Luckily for them, we're here to help
with their PR department. My first suggestion is that they should just say he's doing community service. Like, good point. You can't say this guy can't fulfill his community service obligations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's just there to help. So all they have to do is just not pay him.
Yep.
Hire him, don't pay him, say it's community service, and then maybe, you know, you can slip him some money here or there.
Right. Just a little under the table. But the beak.
My second is say that you were going to hire O.J. Simpson when you got out of jail. But guess what? That was, you know, we have standards, so we can't do that, so we're doing Ray Rice instead.
Right. We're rehabilitating people. Aaron Hernandez has a standing offer from us if he ever gets out of jail, but for right now, we're just going to go with Ray Rice.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to play it safe. Also, yeah. Did I hear you say earlier that the Bronco is making a comeback, the Ford Bronco?
Yes.
No-brainer if you're Ford to hire OJ to be a spokesperson for the Ford Bronco.
I mean, that's, you have to.
Yeah.
I'm going to, the new Broncos, they don't look so great. I wish they would just make old Broncos.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why don't they do that? Why don't, is that, am
vintage,
I like a,
yeah,
am I a genius
vintage,
that I'm just sitting here?
Yeah. Well, they don't make the same types of like illegal, there's a lot that went into an old Ford Bronco that was probably not exactly street friendly right
now.
Oh,
okay. You're a little triggered climate change guy, huh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I see.
Well, okay. Here's what you do. Get the engineers from Volkswagen. Get the engineers
okay,
from
I'd call you a snowflake, but there is no more snow.
Those guys from Volkswagen come in, they monkey around with the gas pedals, and they fix it so it passes emissions. Now.
Yeah, there we go. Next up, we have Radio Wars. This one's troubling because much like the old, you know, no country that has a McDonald's has ever attacked another country with a McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
We have some.
Hank's
just blew Hank's
okay,
mind.
Okay, Hank, I'll rephrase it. No country that has Taco Bells have ever started a war with a country that has Taco Bells.
Fact.
That sounds false.
No, prove me. Prove me wrong.
Prove me wrong.
Are you saying that Taco Bell causes wars, Hank?
No.
Because that would be problematic.
Mm.
I'm just saying it's everywhere.
No, but the McDonald's, yeah, we've never attacked another country with a McDonald's.
I actually think that might be false now.
It could be false now.
But it was true when I first
for
learned
a while.
It.
Yeah. It was in like the late 90s, it was true, mm-hmm. for sure.
But I'm going to keep saying it until I die.
Right. We've attacked some people since then.
Yes.
Much like that, we have a recurring guest fight. Frank Kaminsky, Dan Dockich, we're not going to take sides, even though we side with Frank Kaminsky in this. We're not going to take sides, but they got into a big fight about paying NCAA athletes on Twitter, where most fights start. And it was neither of them really kind of won, but I don't really know where anyone landed.
Yeah, usually there's a clear winner in these situations. If you get into an internet fight that's public for everybody, mm-hmm. usually you can count on coming out smelling pretty good afterwards.
Right.
But so what was Kaminsky's point? Just basically pay players?
Yeah, well, no,
for the likeness?
Yeah, he was basically saying, my likeness made a lot of money, which seems pretty reasonable. I'm not fully in the pay players and make it a free agent process because I don't understand. People who want the free agent process don't realize that will just basically take away college athletics as we know it because there will only be like 25 schools that can pay players and mm-hmm. bid for them. But I do think that a player should be able to profit off their own likeness in some form or fashion.
It's kind of anti-biblical, isn't it? Thou shalt worship no other likeness but mine?
Yeah. Well,
interesting.
Here's the problem is it's one of those arguments where like it seems like everyone's on one extreme and no one's just in the middle being like, hey, maybe we should try to pay them a little.
Mm-hmm.
I don't
put
know.
The money in a blind trust.
Yeah,
or like kind of a
pay
blind
them
trust
after they get out of college, right?
Yeah, actually, in Frank's case, I don't think that he really has much ground to stand on because the pictures that he took after he graduated, where he was on that tank,
yeah,
those made him a lot of money, right there.
JCPenney ads.
So that totally made up for the 4 years that he spent in college.
I do want to point out one problematic tweet by Dan Dockich. He said, Frank was talking about how he was working his ass off in college for the institution making money. And he said, Dockich replied, working your ass off, son, please. We had no restrictions on hours. You wouldn't know working your ass off if it hit you in the nose. So a little time machine because the internet never forgets. Dan Dockich, September 25th, 2014. Love this Kaminsky guy. No hype out of high school. Just worked hard.
Mm.
Whoops.
Mm, that's it doesn't forget.
Okay.
And you also said something about knowing your ass if it hits you in the nose.
Yeah.
I think most people, most people love the smell of their own farts. They can tell the difference. I think he would know the smell of his ass if it was on his nose.
I think that's just PTSD from being coached by Bob Knight. Bob Knight probably put his ass in Dan Dockich's nose many times.
In that locker room, there were asses on all kinds of noses.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You have a Stay Woke, which I'm excited for.
I didn't tell either one of you about this, but I feel pretty confident. They were interviewing Phil Mickelson today at the Masters, getting ready for the big tourney. They asked him about the LPGA scandal.
Okay.
Where Lexi Thompson?
Yep.
She got reported for moving her ball like an inch when she was marketing it.
Mm-hmm.
Phil said that he has seen a number of guys on tour who are loose with how they mark the ball, and it's intentional, and that practice needs to stop.
Wow.
So kind of justifying the guy that called in, stay woke. I think Phil Mickelson called in this rules violation ahead of the Masters to make sure everybody was on their game.
Oh, geez. And so he could actually have this quote out in the media.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Also, stay woke. Maybe he was just making this quote to get the headlines that he paid $2 million to his bookie last year pushed down a little bit on the Google search results.
Okay, that's pretty good, too. Also, stay woke. Phil Mickelson might actually play on the LPGA. He's got the boobs.
He's got the tits.
He's got a rack.
Yes.
So,
you know. Nice rack. Like to motorboat those things.
Great rack.
Yeah. I like a guy with a nice rack. Phil Mickelson. He does it for me.
Real quick, I have an emergency King Stay Kings.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot about this one. Dusty Baker, King Stay Kings. Dusty loves screwing up names in press conferences.
Yep.
I think he called Bryce Harper Rolls Royce or Royce Gracie or something like that for like a year.
Bruce Harper.
Yeah, like the MVP called him just Bowser or something.
Yep.
Yesterday he came out and he said he called Adam Lind Jeremy Lin.
Ooh.
That's a pretty good one.
That is a good one.
So just keep an eye on Dusty. He's good for about three or four
more
of
these. No one's safe, though. It's a smart clubhouse tactic. No one's safe because Dusty doesn't know your name. You're not safe until he knows your name.
Exactly.
Right. All right. Last up, we have a Stay Classy. This one goes to Jim Nance. I know everyone was wondering, national championship, who's getting the Nance tie? Turns out he didn't give one out.
That we know of.
Because he said it was always meant to be a private moment. And he didn't want any of the kids that he, you know, if he gave it to someone, he didn't want that kid to have to go to the locker room and start answering questions about Jim Nance.
That's really classy.
So that was really nice of him.
So he's gonna mail his tie? Is that what he's going?
That's Jim Nance, my guess.
He's gonna go to the post office,
right,
with a package of his tie, find out the player's home address. Can we just imagine the ornate packaging that Jim Nance is gonna put his tie? It's gonna be a cigar box.
Yes,
we know that. It's not a decorative cigar box, no actual cigars in it.
Old newspapers as the packing material.
Williams-Sonoma catalog
as
the packaging material.
I just want to say Jim Nance personifies class because he didn't want to make the national championship about him, so he told everyone that he didn't want to make the national championship about him. That's how you do it, folks. You just let everyone know you weren't doing it because you didn't want anyone talking about you as you tell the press.
LeBron School of Journalism.
Yeah, right there.
I hope that he tells the kid not to say that he got the tie, and then like 2 days later, Jim Nance is like, I told the kid not to say
right.
who got the tie, so you guys can't know who it is.
Really? Come on, Jim. You're like, why'd you have to ruin this? I know we kind of ruined it because we made it a whole story last year, but don't be this baby who takes his tie and goes home. Just give the fucking tie out. Give it out. We'll have some fun with it. I hate when guys do it like, you guys ruined it for me. It was supposed to be a personal moment where I gave them an article of my clothing so they could remember me and my importance forever.
You know what would be nice is if Jim Nance ran to the locker room before the players got in there and then hung it up himself in that player's locker.
What if he hung it on the door and then
you
could never go in? Yeah.
Rogan's like, dadgum, I think two people are bumping uglies in there.
All right, that's our show. We'll see you Friday. We're going to talk some Masters. We should have another big guest.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be a huge week. JJ Watt, Theo Epstein, Adam Morrison, and huge guest
X-Factor,
on Friday.
Yes.
X Factor on Friday. So we'll see you then.
Love you guys.
Presented by Barstool Sports.